Good morning or good afternoon. Not sure where it is you're at, but welcome. Thanks for checking it out today. This is fun. Monday mornings, these are the first words I speak is here. You ever just take time to just sit in silence and just be quiet and not say anything? You should try it sometime if you don't. All right, let's get into this. I don't remember exactly what I put in the description for this, but the gist of what I want to talk about today is obedience. And I want to take a look at this in relation to the discussion we've been talking about and about discipleship. That's really what we are moving into and toward is what does it look like to carry the essence of true discipleship for Jesus? And so I want to look at one aspect of that today. And we're going to read Daniel 3 and look at what obedience can look like. And I'm not necessarily saying what it should look like, but the word should is a little iffy for me. I don't always like that word. So, but obedience is a big topic, and it's one we all want to kind of shy away from because we don't necessarily, or we claim to not want to be told what to do, but it's a lot easier for people to follow somebody's leading than to actually get out there and pioneer for themselves. Because then you have somebody to point to if it goes wrong. You don't have to take any responsibility for something getting messed up or not being done right, whatever it is, whatever that looks like. There is a lack of responsibility there if we are being led. And so it's far easier for us to be led around than it is to actually step out and shoulder a burden and take on responsibility for a role that we've been called into. And we are called and given the command to disciple the nations, make disciples of the nations. And how do you do that if you don't know what it's like to be a disciple yourself? Because whatever it is you are talk about worshiping. You're always worshiping something. And the focus of your worship should always be Jesus. He's the one who's worthy of being lifted high. He's the one who's worthy of being worshiped. But we oftentimes will let our worship go in other ways because we aren't being intentional about what it is we're worshiping or who we're worshiping. And it's the same thing with discipleship in that you are discipling yourself in a direction that could be going away from Jesus. And so, hello from somewhere in England listening in the background. Oh, hello, Anne-Marie. And so it's the same with worship as discipleship. You're going in one direction. And so obedience plays a big factor in there, even though we want to claim, oh, don't tell me what to do. But, you know, again, it's far easier to be led and be able to point to somebody else if things don't go well. So, but with that, I want to get into and look at Daniel 3. I'm going to read this out of the Passion Translation, just because some of the translation, the words that are used, allow you to get a real sense of the emotion that is coming out in this, because there is a connection there. To be able to really get a hold of these stories, we got to be able to connect to them. And while we don't allow emotions to sit on the throne of our lives, we do have to look at their input. And their input is one that can bring connection for us to these stories. And so that's why I want to read this out of the Passion this morning, because it does allow you to connect a little better and be able to picture and imagine with your mind what is happening in these moments. Daniel 3, we'll go ahead and get started on that now. It says King Nebuchadnezzar had a golden statue made that was 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide. The way I found this translated in cubits to kind of understand this and really get the picture of what it is these people are worshiping is this golden statue was 60 cubits high. And that equates to somewhere around 100, 110 feet high, which is the equivalent of a 10-story building, which is incredible. And 6 cubits wide was roughly 11 feet wide. And to help you picture that, I looked up what's the standard width of a roadway, of a lane on an interstate. And this was roughly the same for the U.S., Canada, the U.K. It's 12 feet. Or around 3.65, 3.7 meters, something like that. Hey, Chris. So this statue was roughly the size, roughly the height of a 10-story building and the width of a lane on a major roadway. Very huge. It says he erected the statue on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then ordered an assembly of his princes, magistrates, and governors, as well as the counselors, treasurers, judges, sheriffs, and all the other provincial authorities that they should be present at the dedication of the statue he had erected. So all these officials gathered in front of the golden statue that the king had made. You have to picture the number of people that is in just that short list that would be brought in front of the statue for this dedication, probably thousands. It says from all the provinces, meaning all of the conquered territory from the vast kingdom of the Babylonian Empire, all the leadership was brought before this golden statue for its dedication to bow down and worship it. And I started thinking about the number of people like here in the U.S. that would be, over 500 members of Congress, Supreme Court, White House staff, you know, the entire executive branch, just thousands of people just in leadership that would have been brought out. And then everybody else right behind them, all of the leadership brought out to set the example of worshiping this, God that he has made of himself in this golden statue. It says, then the herald made the loud proclamation. Attention, everyone. Listen to what the king commands of you. You of every nation and language. When you hear the ram's horn and the music of the flute, the lyre, the 10-stringed harp, the triangled harp, the drums, and all the other instruments, you will bow down to the ground and worship the golden statue that King Nebuchadnezzar has made. Whoever does not bow down to worship, it will immediately be thrown into a white hot fiery furnace. Doesn't matter what language you speak. It doesn't matter what nation you're from. The royal decree was made that you will worship this image. Does not matter. It says, therefore, at the set time, as soon as they heard the musical instruments, those present from all nations and languages bowed down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. At that point, certain Babylonian astrologers approached the king and maliciously denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You issued a royal decree, O king, that when everyone hears the ram's horn and the music begins, they must bow down to the ground and worship the golden image. And whoever does not bow down and worship it will be thrown inside a white-hot fiery furnace. Yet the prominent Jews, whom you have appointed administrators of the province of Babylon, have greatly disrespected you, your majesty. Their names are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They do not serve your gods nor worship the golden image you have set up. So they come to Nebuchadnezzar and they're manipulating him. Because they're upset that the Jews aren't falling in line. They are not listening to or abiding by the royal decree by an earthly king. And so they're mad and they're manipulating King Nebuchadnezzar saying, you set these guys up. You're the ones that put them in charge of the province of Babylon. And look at how they're disrespecting you. Verse 13, it goes on. It says, upon hearing this, King Nebuchadnezzar flew into a furious rage and ordered Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to be brought before him. When these men came before the king, he asked them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden statue that I erected? I now give you one more chance. When you hear the ram's horn and the music of the flute, the lyre, the 10-stringed harp, the triangle harp, the drums, and all the other instruments, you will bow down to the ground and worship the golden statue I have made. But if you refuse to worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a white-hot, fiery furnace. So now, who is the God that can save you from my power? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered King Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to offer you a defense in this matter. If the God we serve truly exists, then he will save us from death at your hand, O king. So if you throw us into the fiery furnace, our God is able to save us. But even if he does not save us, you can be sure, O king, that we would not serve your gods or worship the golden statue you have erected. Their obedience is first to God, not these things set up by man. That's where their obedience lied. They were so devoted, so trusting, and put all their faith in God, saying, if the God we serve truly exists, then he will save us. But if he doesn't, we're still not going to serve. We're still not going to bow down to your gods, to this golden statue that you've made. So totally devoted and so totally obedient, they were unwilling to be shaken from their trust in God. Verse 19 goes on and says, upon hearing this, Nebuchadnezzar was filled with anger and his face was distorted with rage against these three. Imagine, I'm not sure if you've ever seen somebody in just a blind rage, what happens to their face. It just gets twisted and just becomes different. You know, there's so many muscles in the face, and when they are flexed in a rage, it just distorts things. And so you just have to imagine, like, this anger that he was filled with. It says his face was distorted with rage. If you've ever seen this, you can picture what's happening here. He is just completely unhinged at these three because they are refusing his royal decree. They are going against what he said because he thinks he is God. He has set himself up in that manner. He ordered his men to heat the fiery furnace 7 times hotter than it usually was, which is an interesting thought because I'm not sure they had thermometers to be accurate here. But he just wanted that thing so incredibly hot that it was going to kill them for sure, as if it wouldn't already. He also commanded some of his mighty men to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the white hot furnace. Immediately, they tied up the three men, and while they still had on all their clothes, their trousers, shirts, and turbans, and then threw them into the white-hot furnace. This was, what I'm taking from this is there was such an immediacy that these mighty men saw Nebuchadnezzar's reaction. They saw his face twisted, and they just grabbed these guys because they were ordered to throw them in the furnace, and they didn't want the wrath to be pointed at them. So they did it so quickly that they left all their clothes on. That's the only reason why I could think this would be noted, is that leaving their clothes on to execute them was unusual. And we know, being familiar with the story, we know how it ends up. And so that could also be why it was noted. It says, but because the king's command was so urgent, and the furnace so overheated, the raging flames burned up the men who carried Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire. So his own mighty men that he ordered to tie these guys up and throw them into the furnace were killed doing so because it was so overheated. They weren't thinking through what they were doing. It says, and the three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, tied and bound, fell inside the blazing white-hot furnace. Suddenly, King Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in amazement and asked his officials, didn't we throw three men bound in fetters into the fire? That is correct, your majesty, they answered him. But look, he shouted, I see four men walking about freely in the fire. They're all unharmed, and the fourth man has the appearance of a son of the gods. Then Nebuchadnezzar cautiously approached the opening of the white-hot blazing furnace and shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the great God, come out now. So out of the midst of the fire walked Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, completely unharmed. When all the king's officials had assembled, along with the princes, magistrates, and governors, they discovered that the fire had not harmed these three men. Their hair was not singed, their clothes were not scorched, and they didn't even smell like smoke. King Nebuchadnezzar said, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, for he sent his divine messenger to rescue his servants who trusted in him. They disobeyed my orders and laid their lives on the line rather than serve or worship any god but their own. So I hereby make this decree. Any person from any nation or language who says anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego will be torn limb from limb, and his house will be destroyed, because there is no other God who is able to rescue so miraculously. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So they go from being favored and having been set over the province of Babylon to taking a stand for God and choosing obedience to him rather than obedience to this earthly king and his royal decree to set up a false god of worship. And they were in that devotion and in that dedication and just radical obedience to God, they were taken to the altar that Nebuchadnezzar had set up to sacrifice these people who wouldn't worship him. We have to look at it like that. We have to look at it as this was a false altar set up to sacrifice, in this case, people to the God, this golden image that he had set up. That's what it was. They were taken and laid on an altar. And the only thing burned off of them was the whatever was used to bind them up before they were thrown in. That's it. Nothing else on them was harmed. And this is such a radical expression of obedience that I think we need to really look at and start to lay hold of when we look at our own discipleship and pursuit of Jesus. That singular focus that says, I'm not gonna be concerned with things that are trying to pull me outside of obedience to you, Jesus. I am not going to be forced to tolerate the things that the world tells me need to be tolerated. I'm not going to affirm something outside of what it is Jesus is calling me to affirm, which is the kingdom. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to, regardless of reputation, regardless of what it costs me, I know God is there to take care of me. Those three knew that. They knew that God had the power to save them from this death on this false altar that had been set up. And even if he didn't, they still were unwilling to tolerate even the slightest resemblance of obeying this royal decree. it's, I can't remember exactly where, I think it's in 1 Samuel. It talks about obedience, more concern, being concerned with obedience rather than sacrifice. This is a huge issue when we look at discipleship, is obedience to Christ. He's looking for you to be obedient. This is something we've been talking about counting the cost and understanding it's going to cost you everything. Without a real understanding in our Western culture of what persecution really means and what it really is, it's hard to understand what the cost is. We need to really be looking at that, though. Really be looking at, what does obedience mean? It means that we are unconcerned with our own fate if it means tolerating something that pulls us outside of our devotion to Christ. I am at a place right now where this is one of the pivotal issues for me, and one of the areas of, gosh, I guess I could call it accountability, but also the standard that I would like to see us all take hold of, is a radical obedience in our devotion to Jesus. If that means having difficult conversations and having to say the hard things to hold someone accountable to who they are, because they're walking outside of that, then that's what's going to have to happen. I cannot be concerned with people's responses, and neither can you, for that matter, if Jesus is calling us into something or giving us an assignment. We have to trust that he has the outcome in his hand. I think we get too wrapped up on what the other side of this looks like and what the outcome is, rather than just being obedient to what it is that he's asking us to do. Yes, counting the cost, but doing what has been asked of you anyways. Absolutely. We need to be able to do just that. Not be focused on the outcome. If we really trust Jesus, then we are going to say, I know you hold the outcome in your hand, so I'm going to press forward. We know that in the difficult interactions we have with one another, I trust that when people come to me, that first and foremost, they want to maintain relationship, but at the same time, they know they're missing out if I'm not showing up in fullness, and something needs to be said about that. It's very easy to hide. It's pretty painful inside to do that, but it can be easier to hide rather than step into the assignment. So this whole talk this morning is not about giving you some rah-rah encouragement. It's not about encouragement at all. I don't even know if I would call it a challenge, but just a question of, are you willing to be as radically obedient as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were when they were faced with being obedient to God, or being obedient to what the world was telling them that they should be obedient to? That's it. It's very simple. What are you going to choose? If you're calling yourself a disciple of Christ, I think I know the answer. But there comes a point where things are happening around you and possibly to you that is going to make you have to choose and choose publicly. And in that case, what is it? What are you going to choose? You don't always know how you're going to react until, you know, a saying, you know, we had in the military was, you don't really know how you're going to react until the bullets are flying and people are dying. When that is going on around you, things become very real, and you have an option. You can fight, or you can cower and try to hide and run away. In which case you're ineffective, and in the spiritual sense, the enemy's not really going to be concerned with you because you're contained off to the side. This is important. If you didn't watch Life Up Here last Friday, you need to go watch it and catch what it is that Angie's talking about when she's saying you need to have a plan. You need to know where to run to. You need to know your source of strength and provision in these times. Go back and watch that and really grab hold of what it is she's saying. It is extremely important. So that's really what I would like you to take away this week is the question, who is it you're going to be obedient to? It's really simple. Your answer will be both humbling and sobering to you, but it is a question that absolutely needs to be answered. And I hope you take the time with Holy Spirit this week to have a conversation around this and get very seriously real about your obedience. Stop trying to hide behind not wanting to shoulder burden or responsibility to be able to point to somebody else, because you'd rather be led than get out and lead. Because ultimately, that's what's going to happen when you choose to become a disciple of Jesus. I love you all, and I hope you have an amazing week. And we'll see you Wednesday.